We're back.
All right, we're back.
Okay.
Happy 2023.
Yeah.
This is our first podcast of 2023, so this one we will make available to the public.
Mm-hmm. For no cost.
For no cost. Today is Friday, January 6th, and we want to thank you for joining us, and we hope everyone had a great holiday season and that your 2023 is starting out healthy, wealthy, and wise.
Yeah, I guess so. Healthy, wealthy, and wise. Well, I don't know about any of that, but I don't know. It's, you know, you were asking me earlier, like, what I thought, like, 2023 looked like.
Sure.
I think before we do that, let's.
Yes. So we want to talk about who we are. So we're Book of Hours. We're a husband and wife team. We are a couple of creatives that make video essays, and we do some blogging and some podcasting and commentary regarding what's going on in the age of COVID, and we kind of bring a creative spin to it. We mm-hmm. both have, you know, kind of corporate marketing backgrounds,
but we also have our artistic backgrounds,
and
as
we
well.
Also have creative artistic and, backgrounds, and so we look at this through a 300,000 view lens.
Mm-hmm.
We look at this more of an existential crisis or an existential situation. And the last video essay that we produced was called The New Constitution, Living War Crimes. So if you haven't seen it, please go and take a look at it. It's on our Book of Hours YouTube channels. We have two YouTube channels, Book of Hours and then Book of Hours Media. It's kind of our backup channel in case we get taken down off YouTube. We have Rockfin as well.
So that's rockfin.com/Book of Hours.
Right. We have a Facebook page, which we load up, you know, tons of articles from various sources and opinions and memes mm-hmm. and commentary regarding what's going on in the world. So you can follow us on that too, if you're even on Facebook.
And you can also find us on Rumble.
And you can find us on Rumble as well. So we wanted to get that out of the way and let people know who are new to our pod that we've been around for a while, but we really started to kind of break into our own talent or space in the age of COVID.
The breakout was the age of COVID, I suppose. Yeah.
We started our very first, our breakout hit was Quarantirony.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably about a month after the national emergency was declared on March 13th of 2020. So in April of 2020, about a month after that, we produced Quarantirony and made it available to the public. And it still stands, it pretty much stands on its own mm-hmm. to this day, three years later.
Yeah, it still stands up, even though, you know, mm-hmm. 3 years ago. Yeah. And then I was going to say something else. Oh, people can also find us on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, so Book of Hours JP, that's J like John and P like Paul, and Book of Hours Julie, all one word.
But we've been also streaming out to Twitter now and then some of our videos, so I just wanted to mention that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, anyway, so this is a footnote, and we started this podcast. This is an audio podcast that we started last year, probably in the second half of 2022. And it's, you can find it on rockfin.com/Book of Hours, and it's a premium. There are a few free versions. This is the first one of the season, but I think of the year. I think we did 12 or 13 before.
Yeah,
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a little disoriented because we haven't done one in a while. It's like
right.
we stopped in like the beginning of the holidays, right?
Right.
That was our last one,
yeah,
and so it's been a while since we've done them. And I'm kind of like trying to get back into it.
So we're back into it now, and the goal is to do the 26 episodes of Footnote for 2023. So we will produce a footnote every other Friday. And
mm-hmm.
so for those people who have donated or are patrons or have, you know, subscribed and have, you know, say to our Rockfin page or to our Patreon page or have, you know, even people who have mailed us a $5 bill in the mail, you'll have access to Footnote. It's only for those people. But this particular episode we will make free to the public. We'll make it available to everyone.
Yeah. Okay. And yeah, well, you can find it on, like I said, we said Rockfin and probably our own blog and, you know,
yeah.
And it will be available on Patreon as well for those patrons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the future. Okay. So I guess we're going to talk about like what we thought like 2023 was going to be like.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that after a few years of discovery regarding what is going on with the marketing campaign that was around a so-called novel pathogen, and then the subsequent medical intervention for the so-called novel pathogen, I think has basically, at the end of the day, I think everybody is, for the most part, except for the very few who choose to live in ignorance or denial, I think everybody's pretty much aware of what it is, and it's a full-on attack on the human race. And with that comes, you know, I think 2023 is going to bring more enlightenment, and with enlightenment comes revenge.
Yeah.
I think we're going to be, we might be seeing some revenge scenarios coming up.
Possibly, maybe. Well, I think that we're going to start discovering, or we're going to start getting people are going to start asking questions more who have not been asking the questions. People have been just kind of accepting and going along to get along. I think that what I found is towards the end or the last couple of months of 2022, I was getting more, they seem to be more open to the idea that something else is going on.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's good. Is this just in your personal experience or?
Yeah,
or
I think so.
In general?
Just in personal experience. Yeah. I think, you know, I can point to at least one or two incidents, situations rather, and that people are a little more willing to hear, you know, an alternative to what they've been told.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I think people are going to be, and you know, you and I have talked about this, how it feels like people are just, they haven't been putting up with it. Like, okay, let me back up a little bit, because we know that people have not been accepting the boosters in as great a number as they did at the beginning with the first and second shots,
mm-hmm.
right? And that basically the people that are going out there and getting the boosters are the ones that are like the true believers in COVID. Right. They were the ones that like yelled at us for not wearing masks. They are the ones that like begged for a vaccine. They are the ones that wouldn't allow their family members to come to, you know, events or holiday events without being tested or without being, you know, vaccinated. And so these are the true believers. They tend to be on the liberal spectrum. They tend to be more urban. And, you know, you and I have encountered them many times. They and a lot of them still live in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, so we've encountered these people, but we've seen a real shift in that whole thing over the last year and a half. I mean, remember when we went to a part of, so we live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania now. We used to live in San Francisco. And we went to Lawrenceville,
mm-hmm.
and we went to a restaurant, and nobody was masked except one dude.
Yeah.
And he looked really uncomfortable.
He really did. Yeah. So it feels like, I know there are parts of the world where people are still dealing with lots of propaganda and marketing around getting your vaccines, getting your boosters, and wearing a mask. But we don't really see that where we live.
Mm-mm.
We don't really see evidence of that anymore. It blipped on the radar for a little bit, and it was very annoying, but it did go away. So it always surprises me when I hear people say things like, you know, like I have a friend in San Francisco, he's on a dating app, and he'll say, every single one of the people that I'm interested in dating have it in their profile that, you know, they're all in masks. Their pictures, you know, for their profile are in masks, or it says, you know, that it tells the date when they got their last COVID shot. And, you know, and so I was thinking to myself, my God, like we live in two separate worlds.
Right.
Like you would never see that in Pittsburgh.
Right.
Well, first of all, people don't really, I don't feel like people meet on dating apps in Pittsburgh. I think they pretty much meet like at work or organically or just normal ways.
Yeah. There's probably some of that going on, but
certain neighborhoods. Yeah. But honestly, for the most part, I think people are pretty old school around here.
Right. Well, another friend was talking about the gay dating scene and how it used to be that they would only talk about their AIDS status, right?
Positive. Which is another fraud.
Right, another fraud. And it's the same fraud, right? It's the same...
Brought to you by Fauci.
Right. You know, so this negative positive thing, this idea that you have to change your behavior in your lifestyle in order to, you know, continue living and be healthy and safe. Safe is a word that was used a lot in both scenarios, both situations.
Yeah.
But now it's not only, you know, the HIV status, it's the... it's HIV rather than AIDS. Yeah, HIV status, positive or negative, and now it's like he said something about it's not only COVID and boosters and like how many shots you've had, and how up to date you are, but also like monkeypox shots and all
or
that,
Omicron
all the bullshit.
Or
right, exactly. So it's like.
It's everything.
Everything, and it's all about safety.
So I have a feeling what's going to really happen in 2023 is you know, since we're talking about predictions and what we, you know, what we assume might happen. And as far as behaviorally, I think that people, and this is something that I said back in 2020, I said, if you want to know what your future is going to look like, then why don't you talk to the disabled community, who pretty much have to lead with their disability in order to qualify for certain kinds of work, in order to qualify for benefits, in order to qualify for, you know, food, access to events. You know, they have to lead with their disability, or they have to lead with their physical issues or whatever.
Right.
That's what the world is going to be like. You know, you also, in the neighborhood we live in, you have little kids that exchange, you know, information about themselves, like what kind of allergies they had.
Right.
You know, like little old ladies, men and women, old folks, you know, talking about their ailments. And I think that that's what the future will hold, is that you will lead with, you know, on your CVs or on your dating apps or on your profiles,
your
you're
going to
lead with, oh, I have cancer, or oh, I have, you know, this rare disorder, or oh, I have COVID, or that's what you're going to be designated as.
Yeah, so
like what you'll be recognized by and looked at through your physical health status,
right?
As opposed to anything else.
Well, I think they've set us up for that through two things. One is the AIDS thing that I was just telling you about, the HIV status, right?
Yeah, it's a behavioral change,
But also they've set us up through identity politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through, you know, the you know, I called this out a while ago, and it's about, you know, what you are, not who you are, right?
Right.
So, you know, you see even in the corporate world, people will, you know, use their pronouns, or they'll you know, lead with, like, you know, what their background is, if they're, you know, Latina, gay, you know, whatever kind of, you know, they like to call it intersectionality, but that's really, you know, not quite it. It's identity politics. It's pure and simple. And I think that was a setup for allowing us to see ourselves as what we are, or our status,
right,
in some ways,
as
rather than
to be,
like, who you are.
Right, as opposed to being like, you know, what Christiane Northrup says is, you are fearfully and wonderfully made, you are very unique, you're a human being, and, you know, your gender and your health status and your intersectionality status is... not really necessarily what you lead with. It could be a part of you, but what you lead with is something that's very unique to your nature and to your individual mark on the world. So I think this will definitely, like, transition into some of the you know, some of the things that we want to talk about next. All of this, you know, sort of leading with these designations. Your health designation, your status, you know, what your gender is, what your sex status is, you know, whether you're gay or straight or whatever,
trans or whatever.
All of that leads to basically the bottom line, which is a transition from being a free human into chattel.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, along with that, mm-hmm. and I agree that that's where it's going, is that conformity is required, right?
Mm-hmm.
That conformity of, like, what you are, how you fit into a standard box-checking kind of situation, right?
Right?
And that's why the corporate world loves identity politics so much, because it allows them to conform, you know, allows them to look like they're being diverse and, you know.
So when what
you know,
it really is.
And then, but what it really is conformity.
And what it really is that conformity. So conformity is kind of a, it's just like this like really modern term that kind of, I like it, but I feel like people, like it gets lost in the mix. So this is what life is. This is what it is. Go back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago when slaves were all rounded up, and there were a whole bunch of different kinds of slaves. There were young slaves, old slaves, there were women, men, there were infirmed slaves, there were strapping slaves who had talents in, you know, carrying heavy things, and then there were other kinds of slaves that were better at doing domestic things, you mm-hmm. know? And so what they would do is they would take each slave and put them on different blocks. Like all of the 20-something males that can carry heavy things go here, all of the youngsters go here, mm-hmm. all of the, you know, women of childbearing years go here. And so then they just designate each block. And so that's what the checking off of the modern boxes is. And mm-hmm. that's what conformity really is,
right.
is that you're being boxed into a role that they feel is good for you. Whereas in a free society and in a society where each individual is able to reach his full potential, you know, you might have that 6'7" or 6'8" strapping young man who could actually speak 14 languages, and he would be better at translating than he would be better than he would be at like building homes or laying bricks.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because of his physical body and
right.
his designation of being like a physically able-bodied young man, they're just going to throw him into this role
right.
without allowing him to reach his full potential. So that's like the equivalent of chattel,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so you're on the auction block and you're being paid for based on what they will designate your talents are.
Yeah.
And your talents are based on your intersectionality designation, your health designation, what kind of disease you have. It doesn't matter that you graduated top of the class. It doesn't matter that you're incredibly talented or artistic, or that you have a beautiful singing voice, or that you can play guitar, or that you are, you know, you have a wealth of talent in other areas. The only thing that matters when you're on the chopping block as chattel is what your health status is, your health designation, or your the stuff you were talking about.
Oh, right. Okay. Like, yeah.
Know?
And I think you mean auction block, not chopping block.
I mean auction block.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
Freudian slip.
Because it is kind of a chop, isn't it?
It
it's
is,
kind of a
yeah.
chopping. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I agree with that. It's and we've seen this in modern day through you know, we went from chattel slavery to, you know, wage slavery. They just basically replaced the one with the other.
Right.
And we've been living with wage slavery for the last 200 years.
Right.
Ever since the first Industrial Revolution. And so it's that changeover that allowed them to, you know, get rid of slavery. And slavery didn't go away because of the Civil
no,
War.
It didn't
and
go
it
away.
Didn't go away for other reasons. It went away because it was no longer viable financially.
Right.
You know, so that what they've turned it into is you know, they found that they could make more money by just paying people wages and allowing them to find their own place to live, and having them pay for their place to live, and
right.
having them pay for their food, and having them pay for their... See?
And they're easily trackable as well.
Just, you know...
You know, slaves kept running away, so the provenance was... And they would... So slaves would get insured, and then the insurance companies weren't able to make any money because the slaves kept running away.
Right, right. So that's part of it too. Yeah, the underwriters were losing mm-hmm. Money because the provenance on the slave was not as great. Whereas if you don't worry about that, and you hire somebody to do the work, and they're like, they're not doing the work, you just fire them. Or you make it, you know, you give them some sort of incentive, whether it's, you know, negative or positive, to keep them around.
Right. And so this is where, this is also too where sustainable development models come into play. It's much easier to track your 21st century chattel or your wage slave, or even if somebody isn't working, they're still considered chattel. It's much easier to track them if they are in, you know, kind of a 15-minute city environment where they've got, you know, easy access to, you know, stores and parks and transportation all within 15 to 20 minutes of their front door.
Mm-hmm. Well, and think about, you know, the working online thing, right? I mean, you know, you work online.
Remote work,
you work remotely. They know where you are. I mean, everything, you know, and you know, when you go shopping online and when you do anything online, it knows the system that you're interacting with, knows the IP that you're coming from, the internet protocol, the address.
Right.
It knows it where you're coming from. So, you know, if you log into Google Maps, it knows that you're in the city or the location of the city where you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
It does. You don't have to put in the city that you're in when you're online looking for something, because it knows through the IP address,
right?
So there's all these things that have come about that have allowed the tracking and tracing of individuals, you know, in the modern world.
It's modern day chattel life. It's modern day slavery. We have got to this point now where we think that we have figured out, like, what the situation really is. You know, there has been a lot of speculation over the last few years. Like, first it was like, you know, oh, it was just a common cold, and people were marketing it as, you know, this really scary pathogen that people were dying from and getting sick. But then we realized it was kind of a combination of both. You know, we opine and believe on this platform that there was a small amount of a toxin that was released to the public, just enough to scare the public into thinking that there was a novel pathogen, but instead it was a toxin that was released by the government and various agencies within, you know, this bigger apparatus, right? And then beyond that, you know, in order to get convince people that this toxin that a few people did imbibe in, or, you know, become
accept
or somehow become, you know, somehow the toxin got into their system and they got sick, and then they were told it was a pathogen or told it was a virus. Then those people were told, well, if you don't take this vaccine, then you could die from this pathogen that you have in your system, so you better take this vaccine.
Right.
So they were given toxins upon toxins. And so that's what we believe. Now, there's been all sorts of confusion about, you know, what's a virus? Is a virus real? La, 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 la. You know, and there are even some people that we have interviewed on this platform, and we agree with them that, you know, our bodies respond physically to toxins and to poisons and to the environment. Not necessarily, we don't necessarily believe that, we've really changed our position on the whole health thing with viruses and stuff. I mean, we really do believe that what you put in is what your body will respond to. And lately we've been putting in really healthy stuff and we haven't been sick in what, about a year now? So, you know.
Well, or it's, for me, it's been like 6 months since I had, you know, my incident, you know, after being exposed to the to the vaccinated.
I actually think that that was longer than 6 months ago. Much longer than 6 months
ago. It's been within a year, but it hasn't been a whole year. But yeah, because I think it happened around like June, I think, May or June.
Well, yeah. if you go back to, so you remember what happened on your birthday, right?
Yeah.
You went from one to another. You went from one, and then on the 25th, you went to another place of employment-ish, sort of.
Right, right.
So it happened way before that. It happened closer to April or May, maybe?
Yeah, it was probably May.
Yeah.
I'd been around vaccinated people, and I fainted dead away, like, you know, you've been seeing. But
like,
I didn't,
the what you see on, but he hasn't imbibed any countermeasure or taken any shot, and yet he fell over on his face.
So, we also know that these shots have been designed to transmit or
transmit
or whatever.
Yeah,
or, you know, or you know, move from
leave
one
it to the doctors.
Move it from, I forget the exact term, but move it from one doctor to, or one body to another, right?
Yeah.
And that, you know, a you know, because they were designed to be self They were designed
self-replicating, self-replicating, basically.
Yeah, or to, you know, you vaccinate one and many get vaccinated. So it's mm-hmm. it's this thing that gets, you know, pushed around or whatever term you want to use. It's such a weird fucking science fiction kind of bullshit thing that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to believe, and you tell people that and they look at you like, you know, you have lobsters crawling out of your ears. And you know, and
maybe not so much anymore, because I think a lot of people are really on board with it.
Yeah, I think so. Know? But before,
too many people are getting sick after they've hung out with people who've taken the countermeasure.
Right, right, exactly. You know? And you know, if you look, what we found in 2021 or 2022, the mRNA, the information about mRNA vaccines is that it was designed to do that very thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, right? That's why it's called messenger RNA. It's right, not right. called stay stagnant and only talk to yourself RNA. It's called messenger, meaning it's going to message out right. the ribonucleic acid.
Right.
You know?
Right. So
it's like, this seems really simple to us. I mean, JP's a UX designer and, you know, I'm not in any tech field, but I also like understand like basic tech systems and basic science. It seems like this would be really widely accepted and understood even by the most like primitive mind, but mm-hmm. apparently not.
Well,
apparently, you know, people don't understand what messenger RNA
is. Think personally, I think that if they had developed this technology before if they had released or promoted, that's a better word, promoted and marketed this technology before the COVID thing, that people would have been completely on board with it. Like, miracle of miracles, a modern miracle. We can now, you know, all get vaccinated at the same time if one or two people, because normally only a small percentage of the population gets vaccinated, and so now everybody can be protected.
So saying if they had done it without bringing in the marketing campaign and the big lie that there mm-hmm. was a novel pathogen.
Mm-hmm.
Like if they had just said, here's a new type of vaccine or a new type of shot, everybody please take it, without like threats and without locking down.
They wouldn't have taken it, and people would have pushed back. But the true believers would have believed the truth about what it is. Now the way it is, they don't. They don't believe you when you tell them that. You see what I'm saying?
It's so weird,
right?
So let's talk about,
because they believe in the science, even though the science is basically, you know, what we're talking about.
Right. So let's talk about like the deployment of this thing. We've discovered, so one of the things that started us on this path is this understanding that it was, you know, a biological weapon that was killing people in the professional sector,
mm-hmm.
Because it was the corporations that were requiring their professionals to take the shot in order to keep their jobs. And these were fairly well-paying jobs in a section of society that's typically healthy. You know, they only have to have one job. Like many people where we live in a kind of a neighborhood of deep poverty, and many people around here have to cobble together two or three jobs in order mm-hmm. to make ends meet. This sort of, you know, this percentage of society that we're talking about, they are not those people. They are the professional sector. They usually have like, you know, a couple of degrees, if not a degree.
Yeah,
they make six figures a year. They work in the corporate sector, the tech sector.
They may not even make those six figures, but they have a regular income and they get good insurance and they're healthy people.
And they're healthy people. And so they fall into all this great criteria for insurance companies that could get the money from them. You know, when they would sign up for their insurance company, when they would get hired at their new corporate jobs, and they would sign up for an insurance package that maybe took, you know, $10, $20, $30 out of every paycheck. And so insurance companies were making bank on this because these people were typically healthy.
Oh, are you referring to the life and loss, like the life, the sort of like free life insurance that came with the thing that Dowd is talking about?
Yeah. So what I'm talking about is like the percentage of people that were actually, that had actually died. And mm-hmm. so why we went down this sort of rabbit hole,
right,
and why we went down this track, and why I eventually did the new Constitution, Living War Crimes. But we started out with Reason Redux, which was a 30 minute video that talks about that particular sector of people.
Right.
And so people were coming back and saying things like, yeah, but people die. It's like, okay, but people in who are between the ages of, say, like 25 and 60, who have really good jobs and are really healthy and take a couple of vacations a year and have maybe five to six figure income jobs and have, you know, a corporation that will pay for their insurance and have great, you know, benefits, those people don't typically die. And it wasn't the people or the people's families that were upset about them dying. It was the insurance companies that were upset because the insurance companies suddenly had to start paying out benefits to these people. Like, these people would sign up for, you know, either long-term disability benefits thinking that they would never have to, you know, draw on those benefits, but they just did it anyway just because.
Right.
And they never thought in a million years that at age 25 they would have to retire and be disabled for the rest of their life.
Right. And what tipped them off in the first place was the group life insurance.
Right.
This was the free policy that nobody ever had to pay for. The company kind of got a basic deal, like a group. It's called group life insurance,
and it's
a package. It's just like it's part of the deal when you get a corporate job, and so this is where the data started coming in,
right?
Because they were suddenly realizing that something that used to like make tons of money for them. Because they never had to pay out,
right?
Was now something that they had to, that they were starting to pay out, claims for, right? And so the insurance companies hired the Society of Actuaries to go run through the data and actually, you know, find the trends that were taking place,
right?
And so this is where, you know, like Edward Dowd comes in, where he started seeing this data and putting it together and realizing that this huge cohort of individuals, the cohort being the younger generation in the corporate world, which was the millennial generation, like 20 to 40, you know, age, whatever.
Yeah.
So they'd be
people
sort of like
that typically don't.
Right. They'd be
die.
They'd be younger. They wouldn't have heart attacks. They would, you know,
right.
and a cohort of people that were like, yeah, healthy, not generally, you know, addicted to drugs and alcohol, not generally prone to suicide, you know, largely. But these things were being, you know, saying, oh, well, these people just committed suicide.
It's
or
like,
these
really?
People did this.
Okay.
Or these people did that.
So,
or it's the Great Resignation.
Right. So hundreds and hundreds of thousands of 20 to 40-year-olds all decided to commit suicide in October of 2021. Really? Like,
right.
That's never happened before.
Right.
So, and with this coincides with, you know, their corporations forcing them to take, you know, the shot in order to keep their jobs. So, you know, all you have to do is follow the timestamp and follow the timing of it and follow the math, so to speak. Well, so we did something called the Reason Redux, and it's a very good. So go back and look at it. You can look at it on Rumble because YouTube took it down.
Yeah, it's on Rockfin too.
And it's on Rockfin too, public, and you can view it publicly. But so the point is that it wasn't enough for me and for us to go, oh, okay, so a bunch of people are dying because their corporations made them take a shot. Got it. The end. All's well that ends well. Oh, well. Everybody will stop. Time to move on. No. The next logical leap is to be like, who is telling these people they need to do this? Who's telling these corporations that they need to do this? Why are things like constitutional law and human rights law being completely undermined and ignored and stamped obsolete in the face of lawsuits? Lawsuit after lawsuit was filed for constitutional violations and even human rights violations. Like, what the hell is going on that it keeps happening?
Right.
Like, it's this snowballing.
Right.
It's a snowball effect. So that's where the new constitution, Living War Crimes, comes into play, where I basically read, you know, Bailiwick News as much as I could, listened to Sasha Latiapova as much as I could, and even Karen Kingston, and was like, okay, well, this is what it is. It's a war crime. These are war crimes.
Mm-hmm. That's the all. End.
Yeah, it's war crimes.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's getting us closer to the why, right?
Yeah.
Because, and I think we've recently, you know, because this is something that I've always been asking, like, why is this happening? Why is it, you know, it's enough to know who, but, you know, we, and every, okay, so this is something that, that I want to talk about too real quick. Is that, you know, everybody has their WHO, right? Not the World Economic Forum, or not the World Health Organization, but their WHO done it, right? Mm-hmm. So some people are saying it's, you know, it's the central banks, and some people are saying it's the military, and some people are saying it's the Chinese Communist Party, and some people are saying, you know, it's the World Economic Forum, and other people are saying it's the World Health Organization. And, you know, other than the CCP and the World Economic Forum, I think that they're all on to something. But what we've really discovered is it's all of the above.
It's all of the above.
Right?
Yeah. So it's the... So what you have is at the center of all this is the World Health Organization that's, you know, basically making, you know, policy for smaller health departments throughout the world, and then throughout the United States, throughout, you know, throughout each state, each mm-hmm. individual state, and then each county and down to the cities.
Right.
Right. So all of this global health policy, World Health Organization. Policy, you know, these global policies, they are written because of their financial backers, which are part of the central bank system.
Right. And right. also governments too.
And
so
governments.
I'm not saying that the Chinese are not involved, but what I am saying is that they are not the primary player.
No.
They are one of the states that are involved with doing this to their own people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the American government, the British government, the Australian government, the Chinese government,
mm-hmm.
states are going after their own people mm-hmm. through these things.
Right.
Through this whole scenario and using these shots. And what Julie talks about in her video is that the shots are called
countermeasures,
right?
Or prototypes.
Yeah. Well, they're the actual medical device or the shot itself is not a vaccine. It's a prototype of a vaccine, and really not even a prototype of a vaccine. It's a prototype of a system.
Right. So it's a
delivery system.
A large scale manufacturing demonstration
mm-hmm.
of
yeah.
a prototype.
Mm-hmm. Well, the prototype
it's not even like
the prototype is the demonstration, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like you said, it's like a system.
Right.
So people really don't quite understand. And because we're Americans, and I'm not Chinese, and I'm not Australian, and I've never lived in the UK, we're Americans. I focused the video essay called The New Constitution of Living War Crimes on, you know, American policy. And it was strictly based on, you know, codes, policy, laws that were put into place in our health departments, you know, so like Health and Human Services updated their policy in like 1983,
right?
You know, under the Reagan administration, where they were given full of like a full scope of power to basically be the end all be all for Americans' health
mm-hmm.
protocols. So basically, you know, the HHS secretary has more power than your constitution. I don't know about other countries, but I feel that because this is a large-scale manufacturing demonstration of a prototype that's deployed by the Department of Defense, and that they're at the helm of this, and they are dictating to the FDA and the HHS what can and can't be and be mm-hmm. said or done, then it's war crimes. It's literally your own government, like literally, has waged war on you.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally.
Yeah.
You know, people have been saying this for years and years, but I don't think they understand the scope and breadth of it, like the truth of it. You read something from Bailiwick News that really caught your attention.
Yeah, from
and
today.
And I want you to read it out loud.
So this is the post from Bailiwick News, who is...
Catherine
Watt. Right. And this is a Substack site that she has, and it really caught my attention. This is from today, or from earlier this week on
Substack.
On Monday the 2nd. Yeah,
right.
The central bankers and their national government accomplices see all of the people as legally enemy aliens or enemy insurrectionists and morally insignificant chattel property or contract collateral that can be attacked and disposed of with impunity to balance financial books and for other purposes. And I was like, wow, there you go. That's the why. I mean, this is, you know, this
that's
is
the
really,
why.
The yeah. why is really comes down to it because it was like, it was always frustrating for me because people would say, oh, it's the central banks. Oh, it's the people that want, you know, like transhumanism, and it's the, you know, this and it's mm-hmm. the that. And it's like, but it still doesn't track. It still doesn't track. But this does because you've got all the players kind of working together. Mm-hmm. And she really focuses on the DOD and the, you know, and how this thing was put together. The DOD was behind that. But the World Health Organization, the central banks, the military of all and all the different states that were affected. So like she says, the government accomplices, mm-hmm. right, are all, you know, part of this, and that, you know, we're looking at this as if we are, you know, they're looking at us as if we are just basically chattel.
Right.
We are the serfs from, you know, the Middle Ages, right?
So when I asked you the other day, I remember I asked you in the morning, I was like, is this a financial reset? And you said, it's so much more than that. And I've always thought it was so much more than that. Mm-hmm. And for people to just flippantly say, oh, this is really just about, you know, turning us into, or turning our money, you know, the U.S. oil back to dollars, mm-hmm. or even in some
into
cases,
into a digital currency.
No, I mean, it's not that. It's something so much more than that. They want to go back 500 years. Mm-hmm. They want to...
Or more.
They want to go back a millennia to where there were serfs and slaves and lords, mm-hmm. and, you know, and there will just be... That's where we are. I think that's where we are now. It's just people are in a huge state of denial, which was my term for 2021.
Right.
I wrapped up all of 2021. Basically, everyone's in denial. You know, and in 2022, I'm hoping the serfs will rise up and get revenge.
Yeah.
You know, that's
exactly.
what's got to happen.
Well,
I guess.
It's interesting that she, you know, that she placed it in that context. And she also...
I'm sorry, 2022 people are in denial. 2023 people need to rise up and get revenge.
Right. There was another part of this that she says, and she brings up the Civil War a couple times. And one is, okay, so let me read this paragraph that came right before what I just read. My take on the legal status of the victims is based on my initial understanding of the permanent state of war / state of emergency. She talks a lot about the, you know, in this article, she talks, or this piece, she talks about how the state of emergencies and state of war allow for certain procedures and laws to take, you know, to click in, or that mm-hmm. they can circumvent things like the Constitution and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, go on. Let me go on. As we've observed the effects during the COVID-19 constitutional crisis and the implications of the central bankers' silent overthrow of the Constitution implemented piece by piece, starting with the Civil War, if not earlier. And then she goes on, I'm convinced, even at this early point in my learning curve, that quiet law substitutions that have corrupted the legal status of living men and women since the Civil War are directly related to the current cull program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's pointing to the Civil War as a demarcation point for, you know, legal statuses and things like that. And we were talking about chattel slavery a moment ago,
mm-hmm.
okay? But I think also I've been talking about World War II as being a very, you know, big point in which, and a lot of people have been,
mm-hmm.
about, you know, where, you know, a lot of things started shifting, where, you know, you started getting these world organizations, the sort of global governance movement, you know, starting with the UN and going into like the World Health Organization and all these UN type organizations that came out of them. And so, you know, you have that happening. we were also, I've also been hearing a lot of people over the last 3 years talking about, you know, something happens every 80 years or so. And it's like, well, I mean, if you look at it, it's like Revolutionary War, Civil War are around 80 years apart, a little more or less, more maybe. And then World War II after the Civil War is around 80 years. And now, again, we're coming around 80 years after World War II. So it tracks from that respect.
Yeah, it totally tracks.
But the reason that I'm interested that she mentioned the Civil War, and we were talking about, you know, chattel slavery and then that conversion to wage slavery that happened maybe, you know, around 40 to 60 years before the Civil War happened. It took that amount of time for the, you know, the Industrial Revolution to really start, you know, kicking in. And, you know, it, I think that they found that they actually, you know, again, coming back to the idea of saving money by, it just made economic sense.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, the war was probably more about forcing the South to give up a workforce. Rather than, you know, like even just ending slavery. It was, or even like, you know, anything else. It was purely economic, but I think it was also capital.
Right.
Human capital, workforce capital.
Right.
That they wanted to get to bring, you know, to the factories. You know, and they made the South pay by not allowing them to have too many factories. They had some factories, but they you know, they fixed it so that it would still stay pretty agriculturally oriented.
Right.
And that the most of the factories were taking, you know, were happening in the North. And but they were taking that population away from them and bringing them into the North. They didn't give a shit about racism
or anything like that
because there was just as much racism after the Civil War in the North.
Right.
If not more than there was in the South, right?
Yep.
You know, so this shift in what I guess I want to get into, and I'll turn it back over to you because it sounds like you have something to say, is there is a shift again. We are seeing another shift economically in the way that people are used as financial
leverage
or financial machines.
Trading,
well, basically, you know,
trading when, people for,
well, not trading people, but well, that's what's happening. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, at the first Industrial Revolution, we went from agriculture to industrialization. And, you know, after the turn of the century, into the 20s, before the Second World War and after the First, we had the Second Industrial Revolution, where it was, you know, electrification, right? At around those time, between those two points, we moved into a consumer-based economy, which went into full throttle after the Second World War.
Right.
Full
and we're not
throttle.
On that anymore. We're not on a consumer-based
exactly.
economy.
Exactly. They want to move us away from a consumer-based economy.
They
want
to base
something...
it on wartime tactics. So...
Well, and financialization of us as a just as a slave.
Sure. There's a lot of money to be made in financialization of us as slaves, but also as targets of a weapon intended to kill. Don't have any rights. So we're not human beings anymore. We're not Americans anymore. We're targets of a weapon that's intended to kill or harm, and we don't have any rights. So under federal or international law, to be informed of the imminent attack or to exercise a right to refuse to be attacked. So if you know that you're about ready to be attacked and you know that you could be harmed or maimed from the attack, you don't have the right to stand up and say, hey, stop this attack, I'm about ready to be harmed or dead because of the attack. You don't have the right to say that because of something called the Doctrine of Necessity framework, which basically says that we are treating this entire life now, life is now war. And so under this kind of framework, in these laws of war, there are with typically prohibitions on chemical and biological weapons that date back to 1975 under the UN Biological Weapons Convention and the 1990 U.S. ratification of that convention under 18 Code USC 175, suspended under the fraud-based application of this Doctrine of Necessity framework. The Doctrine of Necessity is the basis on which extra-constitutional actions by administrative authority, which are designed to restore order or attain power on the pretext of stability, are considered to be lawful, even if such an action contravenes established constitutions, laws, norms, or conventions. Everything has been suspended. Everything has been suspended. The only reason that you do not have men with guns in fatigues knocking down your door right now and stealing your children and force inoculating you or putting a boot on your neck or disappearing you, the only reason that that's not happening is because right now it doesn't benefit them to do that.
Right.
Now it would not benefit them to do that.
Right.
But they have every right to do it, because what they've done is they have stripped away all framework, all protections that hundreds of years have been knitted into into our existence in the United States. And again, I'm just talking United States. I don't know about other countries. I don't know about other countries' constitutions. I'm not from there. I'm only addressing, the people in my country. And
Right. They
have spent hundreds of years weaving in and knitting into protections and things like that. And all of that, it's like pulling at one little thread. They pulled at the thread and they unraveled the whole thing. There's nothing to protect you anymore. So, all the stuff that you just said absolutely applies. Sustainable developments absolutely apply. Those are all pieces of the bigger real issue, which is that there's nothing left. There's nothing left between you and the actual boot on your actual neck.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left between
so
that.
What you were quoting a moment ago was again from this Bailiwick
right,
News
from this article
or piece. Mm-hmm. And so then, along the same lines of what you just said, is she says further down, she says the killer's interest in keeping the killer's interest in keeping the real state of war between governments and people covert for a bit longer. So yeah, so in order to keep this secret, okay, for a bit longer, combined with a well-armed U.S. population, are in my view the only things that have kept them from trying to do gunpoint roundups and gun/needle exchange
execution programs in the United States.
Right.
So let me read that again.
Yeah, yeah.
The killer's interest in keeping the real state of war between governments and people covert for a bit longer, combined with the well-armed U.S. population, are, in my view, the only things that have kept them from trying to do gunpoint roundups and gun needle execution programs in the U.S.
Right.
So it will not benefit them in a country that still has a pretty strong Second Amendment. It will not benefit them to knock down your door, kick your house in, grab your children, disappear your husband, put a boot on your neck, force a needle in your arm. But they're working really hard to make sure that they can get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they have unraveled every possible protection that they've spent, that forefathers or individuals have spent, and we say that with tongue in cheek, you have to understand that for those of you who've never heard us before and are just listening for the first time, we on this platform don't really necessarily believe that you need a piece of paper to be free and to stand up for yourself, that by breathing and being a human being, you don't need a constitution.
Right.
You have your own powerful human sense of self that guides you through this world,
and that we don't even need to have rights.
Right.
Those rights are just inherent in just being a
when
a
you
person,
take your first
right?
breath,
an individual. Yes,
or when you are conceived is when those rights are weaved into you. You don't need a piece of paper.
Well, and you don't even need to call it a right. It's just part and parcel of being a person,
right?
So
and
being
when,
alive.
So when your government decides to just stamp out your existence, it doesn't matter why. The fact is that they're doing it. Whether it's the central banks that want to get paid or whether it's the governments that want to engorge themselves with more power, whatever. The point is that, these people are doing these things, and you have the right as an individual, you have the right to protect yourselves from them.
Yeah.
You have the right to protect yourself from being killed and being harmed.
The other thing that's really important to remember here is that they are creating their own laws.
Mm-hmm.
They're using international laws of war,
mm-hmm.
and whatnot,
right.
International treaties and war, and laws and things like that, in order to justify all of this.
Right. Yes.
And yet at the same time,
right.
And what I was mentioning before is like, you notice in the language that we're talking about, they're not talking about us as being enemy combatants. They're not talking about us as being soldiers or anything like that. That is conveniently left out or changed so that we are not we don't fall under those rules of war. We are now considered, what did she say, like enemy chattel or something? I that was in that first paragraph that I read, where you are considered a belligerent. You're not a soldier, right?
Right.
Let me see if I can find that again, because it's really important to talk about.
A belligerent is a good way to describe it. The central bankers and their national government accomplices see all of the people as legally enemy aliens or enemy insurrectionists,
right,
and morally insignificant chattel. You are now a legally enemy alien, an enemy insurrectionist, and a morally insignificant chattel property. That's what you are.
Right.
And so they will use international law and international wartime tactics and programs such as the one I just mentioned, which is the... I just mentioned it.
Oh, it's the Doctrine of Necessity?
The Doctrine of Necessity.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
They'll use something called the Doctrine of Necessity in order to support that designation as a legal insurrectionist, a moral enemy, or a moral, an immoral chattel property.
Mm-hmm. Right. So.
So we're.
You're basically a lab
rat. Thanks for staying asleep at the wheel all these years, people. I mean, what does it take a couple of people who consider themselves anarchists to discover this? Where are your constitutional lawyers?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the people who went to school for this kind of stuff? I don't have a law degree. Is it that I'm talking about this?
And the person who wrote this piece is not a lawyer.
A paralegal.
She's a paralegal. But I have a feeling that the paralegals tend to know more about things than the actual lawyers do.
Believe me, that is true. I've worked in law firms before in the past in San Francisco, and the paralegals always are the ones that that know more about on with cases than
their talents lie. Their talents lie in the research
in
and
the
understanding to synthesize that research into something the lawyer can use in a court. So that makes sense. But we're talking about insurrectionists, and we're coming up. Well, this show is being broadcast on the second anniversary of what they always refer to as January 6th insurrection.
Right. So that's why we felt it was so important to do this today and to make it public, because they had to, and it was something that you said earlier, and then we'll go ahead and close out this pod, because it's been about an hour now, this particular pod. You said they had to do it.
Right.
In order
So what I was saying earlier was that I kept going, why? For the last 2 years, I've been like, why is this such an obsession with the liberals? I know that there's something going on. I know there's something deep in the recesses of why this is being pushed so hard. Because it's like, you'd hear jokes about it on Saturday Night Live. The New York Times morning email, would bring it up every other week. You'd hear about it. January 6th, blah, blah, blah. And I don't, what I've determined based on what we just read is that the January 6th insurrection thing, and Julie and I have been saying this right from the beginning, that this was pure theater, that it was not real. It was probably even recorded before January 6th. It was probably done on the weekend before, when there wasn't anything going on, because nobody was around. And all this stuff that they claim that these people did, it was all theatrics. And the reason it was all theatrics, and the reason that they keep bringing it up, is they want to use this as an example of where you are, what you are, and where this is all going.
Right.
Okay. You don't have any. You are an insurrectionist now, and you are going to be considered an enemy of the state. and you can be black-sided, because, you know, we keep hearing, and here's the other thing too, is I don't know if people really are, you know, wasting away in jail, if this is true or not.
Without
due process and charges, right?
It's important to put that distinction.
The conservatives keep going back to this. There's people still, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, you know, this is just like some of these other things that we hear about, like, you know, victims of mass shootings. I think they're personas.
Right.
Just like the victims of mass shootings are personas. They're not real people. They are people who were made up to be put out in front of you to say, oh, this is a victim. They suffered, you know, from, you know, they were shot down in the prime of their life. Blah-de-blah-de-blah. They're an example.
Right. And
they're not real.
It's a persona. It's a theatrical persona. And so we feel that the story of the January 6th insurrectionists, which is an interesting term that the media keeps playing over and over again for 2 years. It's now become pretty normal to call it the January 6th insurrectionists, is an entirely fabricated story. But stories are there for a reason.
Right.
They're there to make you aware of what's going on legally behind the scenes.
Right.
And that's what Bailiwick News does so well, is, you know, and so as creatives who look at life as if, you know, everything we see in life is metaphor. We watch movies and see the metaphors in movies about what's going on. We watch popular TV shows and do the same thing. We read old poetry and see the metaphors in the old poetry to, you know, what's happening today. So we are creatives. We look at life through, you know, metaphor, through allegory, through
symbols,
and symbolism and simulacrum.
No, that's something else.
That's something else. Okay. Anyway, but the point is that's what we do on a creative basis. So what we see with January 6th is that it's theater, like the entire thing from beginning to end is theater. Whether there are actual people who are rotting away in black sites or in jail cells without being charged for anything, pay attention when people say that, because what they're telling you is that legally there could be. Whether there really is or not,
right,
we don't know, but legally there could be.
Right. So just, you know, as the corporations and the DOD and all these players are putting this information out on their websites about what they've been doing, you just have to know where to look and how to read it. But they're plain as day telling you what's going on. The January 6th insurrection is, again, one of those messages that went out there saying what it is they're doing and what they plan to do. So you're an insurrectionist. You're going to be charged, or you may be charged and treated like these people that were, you know, these so-called insurrectionists in this you know, thing, this piece of theater that they keep lifting up as being, you know, the most horrible thing ever. You know, our government was attacked and blah, blah, blah. You know, no, it wasn't. It was pure theater. And it's all part of oh gosh, what was it? We talk about it a lot. The where you have two propaganda, propaganda messages coming from the same office, right?
Yeah, we saw this with Adam Curtis's hypernormalization.
Hypernormalization, yeah. Exactly. And so I think this is part of the hypernormalization. I think that this is also, you know, they're not going after Trump. They're going after the idea of Trump.
Right.
They're going after the people that supported Trump. They're not going after Trump.
Right.
He keeps getting, you know, his name keeps getting dragged into this. But, you know, the thing is Trump is just as much a part of all this bullshit that's being done to us as Nancy Pelosi is, as the DOD is, as everyone. They're being used to do these things to us. And so for people to go, oh, you know, poor Donald Trump, and, you know, he needs to be the next president and all this bullshit. He's just as guilty as these other people. So, you know, that's where I stand with that, you know?
And I don't know what else to say. So we've reached our hour. We want to thank you so much for joining us today for this January 6th, 2023 pod. This one will be available for free. There will be 26 total this year. We do them every other Friday. So the next 25 will be available for our patrons and donors. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, I want to give a shout out to the patrons that have stayed with us over the last couple of years, and also the Rockfin subscribers and mm-hmm. members, and those who have recently donated. Thank you so much. We were very, you know, we're very honored that you felt that our work was valuable enough to you know, leave a donation.
Right.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
And look out in the future for more creative works from us.
Yeah, awesome.
All right.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.